Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski. I got my co-host, Dr. Carl, and we actually have, again, I say the same thing every time we have a guest on, a very special guest. His name is Kamal. He is the director, what is it? What do you call it? What do you call yourself? Of examine.com.
Director, co-founder, some other thing.
The boss?
The boss, yeah. So it's in really small world. He actually took over the job from me. I tried to do it and then realized I don't really like dealing with supplements and whatever. And so
I basically got fired
and then Kamal, we always joke. Actually, I've been fired from a couple jobs.
Maybe
we joke about it, but, Kamal Patel.
I'm not joking.
Good. Great guy. We wanted him to get on this on our show because, like, people ask us all the time about supplements, and examine.com is probably the best place to look up for the evidence. They've aggregated all the data to look up the evidence on supplements. In fact, you guys just launched a new version of the website, and it's a good place for, like, hey, I'm going to buy a supplement. The person at GNC, if anybody even goes to GNC, now it's all via the internet, Amazon, listening to your favorite guru. If there's like, if you're like wondering if there's any data to even support what these people are claiming, it's a good place to go to look those studies up. So welcome, Kamal.
It's my pleasure.
So what's...
Well, I got a question before we get started, just because people may or may not know, but can we define what a supplement is? Especially, you know, we talk a lot about medications and what's the difference between a medication, a dietary supplement, a supplement? I mean, supplement in general just means adding something to complement or enhancing anything else. But can you just tell the audience, like, what the heck are we even, what is a supplement in your, from your perspective?
So the technical definition varies by country, but my definition is that basically if you have a compound that works, that has efficacy, and you can make money from it, it's a drug because you test it repeatedly in phase 1, 2, 3 trials. If it's a supplement, it's generally something that's generally recognized as safe. And the presumption from the FDA's viewpoint is that it's safe unless proven otherwise. For a drug is that it's not safe until proven otherwise. So supplements end up being this catch-all term for things where a lot of it is nutrient supplements. So either a macro micronutrient or a pseudovitamin or something like that. Herbs, traditional Chinese medicine sorts of things. And then a huge category of everything else. And one of the main issues with supplements is that that presumption is probably not correct. That supplements are safe unless proven otherwise. And that kind of all flipped in, I think it's 94, when DSHEA, the major supplement legislation in the US, passed. And that was pushed forward by the supplement industry, of course. And the supplement industry is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that, you know, if you're selling something that maybe works or does work, you want to make money and you don't want your government restricting it to being prescription only, or having a bunch of supplements that are not legal. And there's other countries where that's the case. And the U.S. is not like that. So in certain other countries, there will be a supplement that's used a lot in the U.S. and they just don't have access to it at all.
So what about the whole thing about, like, the supplement industry isn't regulated and this isn't tested? Because that's something Doug Coleman and Jose Antonio and a few other people, whenever, you know, someone on Twitter will say, hey, supplements aren't regulated, so you shouldn't trust them. And they'll go, well, technically they are regulated. It's more of a retroactive type of thing. Do you, I mean, you were just kind of talking about that 1994
legislation.
Yeah, so
they know better than I do because they're involved in trials and then they you know, are involved in companies. But I think it's somewhere in the middle. And there is regulation, but it's sort of reactive regulation. So it's not that you have to prove safety and a well-conducted trial before you market a supplement. It's that there is some basic checks done. And then if there are things reported, then the FDA will try to regulate.
Right.
But compared to the number of drugs, there's just so many more supplements, and it's basically impossible to regulate all of them, especially when it comes to, like, safety is one thing, but batch-to-batch variability, and then subgroups that a supplement might be dangerous in, it's just hard to tell because samples are never large enough.
Yeah.
And one thing, you know, that I always tell patients, see if this makes any sense to you, is that if you're taking something like a supplement that's supposed to have some sort of health benefits, that means you're doing it under the presumption that you think it has essentially pharmacological effects, like it's doing something physiologic in your body, like a drug or a medicine or something like that. And they often don't really take into account, well, maybe it's doing benefit, whether it does or not, but it also may have harms if it's actually doing anything physiologic. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I always use that. There's two sorts of setups like that I use all the time. One is that, you know, if something does something in the body, then it always has room for detriment because there's no magical things like the sun, you know, sun is good, sun is bad. But then the other area like that is natural medicine, you know,
naturopath.
There is no Eastern and Western medicine. There's no complementary medicine versus Western. So things that work, whether it's a drug or a supplement, or whether it's Eastern or Western, and like studies don't care, right? It's only regulatory agencies that dichotomize these things that really care. But in certain countries, like certain types of medical nutrition therapy, in one country something is regulated and prescribed by doctors, in another country it's not. So it can be a little bit arbitrary.
Yeah, that kind of goes to one of my favorite quotes that our oncology friend Dan Bowers always would say, and I always get it wrong, but it's something like, if an alternative medicine is shown to have efficacy and safety in a trial, it's not alternative, it's just medicine.
Yeah.
But people get, you know, people confuse the term medicine. It's, you know, that's the practice of essentially healthcare and stuff. So anyways,
So what... are there any good supplements that we're pretty anti supplement, although we take a few,
we're just evidence-based, you know, for, plenty of supplements that are basically
hype,
medicines.
I would say anti-hype from random gurus. But like, if you had to give your list of like top five supplements that the general population may want to look into, what does that end up being looking like?
You probably know all of these and I'm sure you take them. So for the vast majority of people, the only supplements that definitely will do something would be creatine, a nutrient that you might be lacking. It's often, you know, if you're deficient in vitamin D, if you're not deficient, then it's not going to do anything. Magnesium, but not at the level of hype that, you know, it's reached in the past few years. Possibly collagen supplements for certain things, but it just varies widely. Undenatured type 2 collagen occasionally for joint pain. Possibly collagen for certain skin elasticity sorts of issues.
That's why I started taking conditions. It.
What's that?
I literally started taking it for that because people kept asking about collagen for, you know, like medical purposes. And so I was like kind of doing a literature review and I found data to support skin and hair health, which I get a lot of as an endocrinologist. You know, people are always talking about that. So I even jumped on and started adding it to my coffee to try to help my beat up skin from all the years of wrestling. Yeah.
Well, the one issue
you have, you're wearing headphones to call.
No, I don't. It's not my cauliflower ear. It's just my face is beat to hell. And I don't know.
It's
I don't
like
think
a
it's
catcher's
working.
Mitt. Yeah.
We've thought about that for,
thanks, Kramer.
So for Xamarin in general, if at a future date, we want to very lightly get into over-the-counter medications, then we don't want to cover anything that we're not qualified to cover that might be dangerous. So just a week ago, I was thinking possibly some of the components of skin and beauty over-the-counter formulations because it like once you get to 30s and 40s, it doesn't matter who you are. You look older and then there's and you're like, oh, shit, what do I do now? I need to do a lot of research. And those things generally don't harm. So I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, that would be a great, I think that's a great idea, because there's a big Twitter battle. You probably saw it with all these people talking about sunscreens and all these creams and talking about the potential chemicals that are in them that get into your bloodstream and whether it matters or not, the toxicology. Interesting stuff. You guys should have a little section. Going back to creatine a little bit, I remember back in high school, it was just coming out, actually I was in elementary
school. You were younger, because I was in high school.
Maybe I was
started looking into it.
Middle school.
Did you start taking creatine in elementary school?
Not in elementary. I think might have been middle school, early high school.
Yeah, because I was in high school and we were looking into the science. I did a whole project on it. And of course, my project included a big picture of a sperm, because it turned out that sperm has creatine in it. Probably didn't help any.
Your quote was, "Sperm is chock full of creatine." I'm pretty sure that was the quote.
That was the quote on my poster in my 11th grade science class. And then Spencer brought it and started taking creatine to all his friends at middle school.
Okay. How does it work, Kamal? Can you tell us how creatine works?
Creatine helps with recycling of intermediate energy metabolism steps, so phosphate groups. And about, I don't know if what the percentage of creatine responders is, it might be around half of people respond to creatine.
Yeah.
You're more likely to respond to creatine if you're on a vegan or vegetarian diet. So it's like a lot of the vegan and vegetarian diet supplements that are recommended are things that start with a C, carnitine, choline, creatine. So it's super easy to remember. And for people who eat a ton of red meat, it often doesn't help quite as much. But if you load up, not actually like loading as how people used to do in previous years, because you don't really have to do that. But if you load up on creatine, most often it's the only supplement that people will find improved gym performance from, not really pre-workouts as well.
You know, it's interesting, the statistics you just noted, that goes all the way back to that darn poster I did in 11th grade.
We don't
or
even
whatever.
Need examine. We just need
to. Yeah, we just need your poster.
I mean,
poster.
It's amazing. I remember, and I've said this forever, that I think I quoted something like, you know, 2/3 to maybe 3/4 of people respond to it. But like, as I remember it, about a quarter of people have enough stores, get it from the red meat. And every time, see, I don't take it because anytime I ever tried it, I couldn't really ever tell. And I was always pretty well, maybe maxed to my genetic potential, you know, Spencer might suggest, but so I don't know if that has something to do with it, but I absolutely remember that. And I've always kind of quoted that exact thing. So maybe the data
hasn't
really changed
that much.
Yeah, I don't
know what the literature is as far as percentage, but what was this other thing I was thinking of?
Sorry.
Yeah, you ruined it.
There's a couple of questions I've had about creatine. I don't write our pages as much anymore, so I'm a little bit out of date with the research, but I know recently there's been two things that were interesting about creatine. One was something about responders, and one was, you guys might have already known, there was a trial that was going to start on creatine and hair loss, and then there wasn't enough funding.
Oh.
Brian Tinsley.
Oh, God. Spencer, we better start taking it.
Well, it actually helps with hair loss. So, because...
No, the reverse. So nobody knows. There's always been anecdotes of it worsening hair loss. And then there's a bunch of confounders, right? Because people get older. So that's one thing. And then everybody's a guy, or most people are guys who are reporting these. So then there's going to be a trial, and it's in clinicaltrials.gov. It's listed
interesting.
There. Then because of funding or enrollment or something, it had to stop. And that's one of the questions we get the most, because once you've been lifting for 20, 30 years, then you're like, oh, my hair is thinning. Should I stop taking this creatine? It's not worth it anymore. Especially because finasteride and some of the other medications that are used for that have had some issues. So
yeah, that's interesting. There's the one study in rugby players where they're like, oh, it might increase DHT, which can increase hair loss. It's not plausible. It doesn't even biologically plausibly make sense.
Yeah, that was the one that started the alarm back when. And then this was supposed to be the trial that actually explored the issue without looking at intermediary.
Interesting. What about like general population? Do you think like, you know, let's say our patients that come in that, you know, they might be a recreational exerciser. Do you think creatine has any merit in that individual?
Well, So I'm currently at somewhere below general exerciser. So 15, 20 years ago, I was a 1B powerlifter. And I was like, I'll do anything to get an edge. Yeah. And then I had a bunch of joint issues and surgeries that went bad. And then now there's basically been no resistance training for 15 years. So at this point, it's like, if you're at general or lower level, at average or lower level, you know, what is your goal in taking these supplements? Because yeah. it's not like if you have a wife, husband, partner, like they're not going to notice that 0.1% extra, you know, lean mass. So I don't know. I think for creatine, it would be less so for body composition and more so for potential cognitive or depression benefits.
Yeah.
And there's way fewer trials for that, but it's promising.
So I know, you know, we've talked a lot about, obviously, you know, I see a lot of diabetes, you know, obesity, diabetes, as does Spencer and probably a lot of our audience does. And the question comes up on creatine a lot, you know, regarding kidneys, but also just the benefits for obesity and diabetes, et cetera. There have been some studies suggesting maybe a benefit for people with type 2 diabetes. And actually, just to kind of check on myself, I just pulled this up. There was a systematic review meta-analysis in the clinical nutrition from the ESPEN group from February, not ESPN. Clinical nutrition, anyways.
Disney's taking over everything.
God. February 2022, it didn't really show, like there was not enough data to really say it positively affects it. But obviously the reason they did that is because there are some studies suggesting it may help with some fasting glucose and insulin resistance. And certainly I've never seen any evidence of harm, in people with diabetes, even for their kidneys. It just might, make it appear higher or a worse kidney function because of that's how we monitor kidney function. But, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but
yeah,
our perspective, it's okay.
Creatine is listed in our diabetes and blood sugar guide, and it's not a core or whatever we call the next level of supplement because, to reach a core or primary option or something, you have to have a certain number of trials and cover enough subgroups. And it's just not the case with creatine. So I think it's in the secondary or unproven options. But I don't actually know what all the mechanisms are, so I'm not well read.
The only mechanism I would think is like you get a little bit more muscle, you have a little bit more storage depot for for glucose. You can do a couple more reps in the gym, yeah. But by itself, I can't imagine it would do much.
I've seen stuff about, GLUT4 translocation, yeah. Which for those of you out there, I mean, I used to call it the little sugar trucks in your muscles that go out and pull sugar in. So maybe it helps a little bit.
Okay,
not like a medicine, but, you know.
Here's what we wrote down as potential mechanism. So increasing blood sugar uptake during muscle contraction. So that's what you're talking about. Number two was indirect stimulation by increasing insulin secretion. I don't know if that's independently. So speeding up blood sugar clearance from the bloodstream. And third is exercise performance, which Spencer was talking about.
So, yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, so what about like multivitamins? Does everybody should be taking one or no? I don't. I take some of my kids' gummies once in a while, but
I take one once in a while too.
Funny, we're gonna start a YouTube channel. You know, after all these decades, we're actually gonna have a video. But I think the first video might be on gummies. So I just started doing some research. Aside from gummies, where apparently, so gummy vitamin companies try to fund studies on increased absorption of certain nutrients from gummies, but it's always like marginally better, marginally worse, and you just can't fit as much nutrient-wise in a gummy. And then they degrade on shelves over time as well. But for multivitamins in general, it's really fascinating. And I don't know if a lot of the answers are known. The main thing is that if you're nutrient deficient, often because you're older and your absorption is lower, or you eat less food or whatever reason, multivitamins tend to be a good idea. For other people, it depends on what the multivitamin is. So with multivitamins, you usually can't fit in nutrients that require a lot of space. Like you can't put in that much magnesium because then you'd have to have a horse-sized pill or have to take a bunch of pills. And then the better absorbed forms of nutrients tend to be more expensive and people don't really like buying really expensive multivitamins.
Yeah.
So that's why different trials show different things. Sometimes it's a decrease in and upper respiratory tract infections over the course of 2 years. And sometimes it's, an increase or nothing. So it's kind of like saying, are probiotics good or bad? Because it's not really one thing.
Yeah, there's so many different.
Yeah, it might be a good idea, I think, for people who either eat crappy diets or are older or have a restricted diet of some sort.
Yeah.
What did I see recently? There was something.
Cognition
it was a cognitive
versus,
thing. Yeah, maybe it did. And that was the first time I've ever seen anything.
Cocoa flavanols.
Which is surprising. And didn't one of somebody we know on Twitter post it? And I was like, I was very skeptical.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know.
Because you got to look at the methods of how they, I didn't look into it, but you have to see how are they even assessing cognition and then all that stuff. Interesting. Okay. So moving on from kind of stuff that we, might be recommended for the general population. The other thing that I always recommend is like protein powder for those who just can't get enough protein in their diet. But is that really a supplement? It's kind of like food to me anyway.
It's a food. So you're supplementing your diet.
Food supplementing.
It's more of a literal food supplement. But
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's a little bit of a gray area because if you take like dehydrated garlic, you know, for some indication that's a supplement, but people always think of that as a supplement, but really it's a food.
Yeah.
But you don't take protein powder in capsules, or at least since the 80s. So now it is, you know, I don't know if like what was it? GNC Gold? Was that what the card was called? I remember the first time I used my GNC card, it was for protein pills. And that's not really an efficient way to get protein.
Oh, no, God.
But yeah, I think it's, you know, whey and casein. Vegan protein powders, I don't know, it's a little bit different, a little bit more processing, but yeah, they're borderline food.
Yeah. Wasn't there something about heavy metals found in plant-based protein? I drink pea and rice protein, but I know that maybe the vegan ones have a little bit more heavy metal, maybe because of the soil or something like that.
Oh my God.
But there was also a heavy metal thing in whey like 10 years ago.
So my strategy
when I supplement is usually just to rotate supplements because,
holy
you know,
cow.
Like you don't want to take everything.
Yeah. What are the top five supplements you guys see that are probably useless that people are always asking about? I have a few in mind, but I'd be interested to see what you guys see.
They tend to fall under fat burners and testosterone boosters.
Yeah.
And there's like a million and one supplements that don't work. And then there's like three that might have some efficacy.
Yeah, that's classic.
So the fat burns. I love making fun of fat burners. I make memes about them, how they're basically worthless unless you have maybe some ephedrine or something, which is now you don't get that in the United States. But what are
you can insane? Right? Or I can't remember.
I think it's like Bronchaid. You have to like get it from the gas station. Along with some boner pills there.
I just got fired again.
He gets fired every episode because
I get fired from my real job. You get fired from all your other jobs.
My internet job.
So Casey, Casey. Carl.
Casey Carl. It's
Casey Carl.
Whatever. People think there are three of us. It's fine.
Okay. So is Spencer the one who does a bunch of stuff and then you do like
Real stuff. Doctor stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I try to cross collaborate.
I'm all on. I'm in the cloud. I am still practicing medicine, but we joke because I make all the memes.
Yeah. When's the last time you saw a physical patient, like in real life? You don't really ever.
I haven't seen it since 2017.
Yeah. My God. He hasn't seen a patient in the office.
I don't have to get
coughed on. I have an online doctor in your, I don't know if it's still your same group you work with.
Oh, SteadyMD? Awesome. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, that's my primary care.
It's because I was like in between insurance one time and I had a primary care who just didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'll get this online doctor just so I can order labs more easily because I don't want to have to convince him to like do a blood panel once.
Yeah. The reality of it is it really is the future. And I know we're getting way off topic here, but I like to tease Spencer about it, but when COVID came around, it really was the silver lining of that really forced, you know, we'll call them the real healthcare systems, but to adopt what Spencer has already been doing, because we knew we could do so much virtually. And so as an endocrinologist, a lot of what we do is we talk, we learn about patients' history. We look at their blood work, consider what's going on. And I don't have to physically see people all the time.
You just tell people it's not your thyroid and you slam the door on them.
Right. So anyways, that was a little
well, off just trail, a real, another tangent there. I mean, God. Like, well, because people, when I had my first kid, I became a germaphobe. Like people would come in coughing and wheezing. And I'm like, you just have a virus. I don't want to get this virus, whatever this is, and then give it to my little baby. So I'd go in there, hold my breath, and basically be like, hey, I'm Dr. Spencer. What are you here for? Let me listen to your heart and look. And then get out of there and basically come back in with a hazmat suit on. But it was very nice. Yeah,
God forbid you improve your kids' immune systems by exposing them.
Yeah, no. Jesus Christ. Put them in a bubble.
That's a whole other tangent.
I will put them in a bubble. So Kamal, tell us about, fat burns. What's usually in these things? A lot of caffeine.
It's everything you can throw in a pill, right? So, like the active ingredient is caffeine. So if it's not caffeine or a variant of caffeine, then it usually doesn't do much. And then and then herbs. So there could be, at least last time I looked, the ones that kind of sort of worked maybe included often yohimbine or some kind of formulation of that, EGCG or some kind of tea or green tea extract, like a boatload of B vitamins, just cause it doesn't really do anything. And then just add in some more herbs, tribulus or whatever. And then if you feel something, then it's like, well, it's working. And then who measures their fat loss in a controlled setting with the washout period and a control. So, that's about it.
Yeah. So based on what I know about the literature, it's pretty much pouring your wallet down into the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well drink some coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause caffeine does have some benefits.
A little bit of increased lipolysis, maybe a tiny little bit of appetite benefit. Yeah.
And there are other benefits too to caffeine. And we keep, every time I see a study on health benefits of coffee, I share it and people love it because overall, the cumulative body of evidence does seem to support the general health benefits of coffee, with obvious individual nuances. But
All right, so save your money when it comes to fat burners. What about, tell us about these testosterone boosters?
Well, fat burners is, there's not really a lot of effective fat burners, but I think there might be more effective fat loss supplements, sort of. And it's basically fiber. Fiber is a really awesome weight loss supplement. And if you don't want to cook or whatever, there's soluble fiber. You can just take it before meals, and then it's like automatic extra couple pounds a year.
Well, so what's your favorite sponsorship from Hydrogel?
What about? Yeah, we did a whole podcast on Planet E, which is this Hydrogel.
It's basically a pharmaceutical version of that.
What's your favorite? Glucomannan or what is it? Psyllium husk? What do you usually recommend?
It depends on what people's reactions are. So some people get bloated on psyllium husk, and then it's, some milder version. So it really depends on the person.
Something like that. So you would say some bolus of soluble fiber with a lot of water before meals might help with, that's kind of what we said in our Plenity podcast, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's just, and it's like, I think kind of a wiser thing would be I don't know if people do this at all, but like a smoothie or a drink that has foods rich in fiber, but it's, once you get above like this amount of effort, then people just don't do it. So
for those of you who are listening and don't see it, he had his fingers almost touching together for the amount of effort.
Tiny, tiny little, All right. So, okay. So fiber, no fat burners, and then these testosterone boosters.
Don't get us started.
Oh yeah. This makes us so mad. Cause you see these people just, you see the ads on Instagram and whatever, Facebook. What are they putting in these things?
So there's a lot of herbs. The very first herb I saw probably back when I had my GNC gold card was horny goat weed. I think that's the first one. I just thought it was so hilarious. So I think that's still in certain supplements.
Yeah, it is. I've seen it.
It is? Okay.
I've heard people ask about it anyway. So they've shown it.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's supplements that there's been like maybe a weak link and then a lot of mechanistic evidence to show there isn't a link. And these supplements work for other things like ashwagandha. So So I don't think ashwagandha helps testosterone, but because it's so prevalent and it's used for everything else, it finds its way into testosterone.
They're just like, throw it in there.
I remember some, you know, very slight data suggesting maybe D-aspartic acid. Does that, right?
The amino
acid,
so I think
which probably doesn't have any harm, but.
It's one of those things where I think there might be very, very few trials, like two trials. And then the effect is probably not large, and it probably doesn't work in the vast majority of people. But again, if you're if you don't want to go to the doctor and get prescribed testosterone, then you can't convince people not to try this stuff, right? Like it's just they're going to try it anyway.
Yeah, like,
although the thing is, most if you actually, so go back to our, we have a podcast on hypogonadism, low T. If you actually have symptoms of low testosterone, do not get a supplement. Please discuss it with your doctor, because you may actually have pathophysiologically low testosterone and something that needs to be evaluated and treated. And you shouldn't just take testosterone if you don't actually have an irreversible cause of it. So
what about,
that's a whole other thing. What about tribulus?
Yes, tribulus, stinging nettle root, boron.
I know boron has extremely weak evidence. I can't remember what the evidence says. I can't remember for stinging nettle root.
Yeah, I think it's the same.
And I don't know. I don't remember what else is in supplements. I know that
fenugreek. Fenugreek.
Oh, and which has some data, you know, a little bit for like even some metabolic benefits, like lipids and, you know, sugars and stuff.
You
very
know,
very modest.
As a tangent, I kind of wonder. So there's plant extracts that have been tested, and then they might have some impact on a variety of things. I would be curious to see, as an analogy, or I don't know, analogy is not the right word. You know, blueberry is touted for cognition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they always say berries high in anthocyanins, and the darker the better and all that stuff. But I wonder if it's just because a lot of other things haven't been tested. So if you're going to test like 10 random foods on 10 random outcomes, you're going to find probably a little something on each. It's just that the things that get a lot of testing are like walnuts because of the walnut board, you know, and and certain
walnuts are good for you.
We love walnuts.
Right? I'm a shill for Mr.
They're,
Peanut.
They're good
nuts
for your brain because they kind of look like
walnuts,
your brain.
Top three nuts.
I've heard because they look like your brain. It's got to be good.
That makes sense to me.
All right. Okay. So we got
south.
Any other like just completely worthless stuff? What about pre-workouts? What do you think about those? Those are like a big one.
Yeah, pre-workouts are kind of like similar to fat loss supplements in that the effect is usually so mild and it's from two studies that, and they also have overlapping ingredients.
They can have like
lots
all
of
sorts of things. Yeah, a lot of caffeine, but they could have creatine in them, but then they have like all sorts of other things in them. Some that make you almost like niacin to make you flush.
Yeah, beta alanine.
Like something's happening.
Beta alanine. Some people like the niacin flush. Some people like the beta alanine tingle. But you know, beta alanine's not bad. I think it's generally better for. I don't know if it's not necessarily aerobic, but more like 1 to 3 minute activities. I can't remember if that's right. Nitric oxide boosters tend to be one of the only pre-workout supplements that might have some benefit. And then it's just that whole list of nitric oxide possible boosters, whether it's beet powder or citrulline or arginine or whatever, you know, it's just trying one and seeing what works for you.
Yeah. So for most people listening, that probably can save your money and again, drink some coffee or espresso or something like that. Let's see what else, any other supplements I can think of. So yeah, testosterone boosters, fat burners. Those are like the big ones I like making fun of. I know we wanted to bring up berberine. My brother and I used to, I was in med school and this berberine stuff is a Chinese herb.
It's a plant alkaloid.
Your company, or did you, was your thing like true berberine or something?
It was called glycosulf.
Glycosulf.
And the reason we did this is because, you know, obviously as med students and an interest in diabetes, there were real studies published in very prestigious journals. Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, which is like one of our leading journals. And we thought this is really interesting. It really is truly a sort of alternative, in quotes, you know, sort of essentially
like a
medication.
Drug. It was like a
drug. It had some drug effects with pretty minimal side effects. And we thought, what the heck, we'll get in on this before others do.
Nobody was selling it at the time. We were like, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just like,
from a business perspective,
contacted a manufacturer, and we, you know, talking about quality control, this manufacturer made sure that they did testing and they had to get it, CMP or whatever, GMP certified, good manufacturing process certified. And so we were like, all right, let's put this in a pill. Let's put it at the clinical efficacy dose, the 500 milligrams. And we got the purest berberine you could find. It was like 97 or 98% pure. And it was extremely expensive, but we're like, whatever, let's just do it. And we got to the top page of Google right at the, because we were the first ones. Of course, we didn't know what we were doing, so a bunch of competitors came in a few months later. But not necessarily
that we didn't know what we were doing.
Well,
from a business standpoint. We were also doing it in the context of, we're physicians. We're not going to say that this is better than the medicines we have, because that's not true.
Yeah.
We were honest. And I don't want to say too honest, because we would always be honest. We don't want to be quacks. We want to call out quacks.
Right.
And unfortunately, all the quacks caught wind of it and then beat us. Beat the hell out of us.
But in the meantime, it was really interesting. People were taking this stuff and actually getting off their insulin and things. I was like, I didn't actually believe it, because I was like, does this stuff actually work? The studies show it does, but these are small studies. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not big, huge pharmaceutical studies with thousands of people. These are like maybe, you know, a few hundred people, or even in the fewer than 100. But these people were like, when we'd run out of stock in the beginning, because it was people, the demand was so high, and people were like, I need this. This is my new medicine. Otherwise I'm gonna have to go back onto insulin. Anyway, you guys have a lot of stuff on berberine on your site at Examine. What's anything new on that? I know you said you haven't been necessarily keeping up with berberine, but
I don't think there's anything new. It's probably, I don't know as much about this as you, but I think it's probably always going to be, what is it? It's more effective with metformin than metformin alone.
Yeah.
Usually.
They have slightly different mechanisms. And so, and what's funny is it also lowers LDL cholesterol. The one thing is that I tell people, I'm like, first of all, don't just take this. We sold the company. We let it go because of the conflicts of interest. By the way, back then we didn't really understand it all. And then we're like, oh, we should probably not be selling supplements, even if it is efficacious. But
and we couldn't compete with the quacks.
We couldn't.
We're not going to lie and over market it inappropriately.
So. Yeah. So we ended.
So we lost. We lost all our money.
Yeah. We ended up letting it go, but it was a very interesting, like, drug-like effects from that. But we didn't want to tell people, hey, take this instead of metformin because it's natural or whatever. Interesting.
I think the latest research I remember about berberine in the past 5 years that changes things is for antimicrobial purposes for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth.
Yes, interesting.
Which is kind of where originally it originated as an antibacterial, and then they were like, oh, it has some glycemic lipid properties, and that's where we got wind of it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So what else? All right. So before we get off, anything else with Examine that you guys are doing? You guys kind of look at the supplements. That was what you guys kind of specialize in. But anything else you guys are doing over there that you want to let audience know about?
The proportion of our intervention pages that are supplements will probably go down a little bit. And the reason is that I think that supplement trials tend to be lower quality than like almost any other kind of trial. And we should start relying a bit more on meta-analyses for those, and overweighting meta-analyses and underweighting smaller trials. But the stuff that I personally find fascinating and that I always lurk on Twitter about and I don't participate is like the proportion of plant and animal foods in somebody's diet. When you'll never have a direct trial comparing these two. So how do you make that decision? Or if you're just starting your, you know, fat loss journey, there's 10 million studies. So then how do you start? And this is more of an algorithm based thing. So it's like, you don't want to start thinking that you need to lose 10 pounds in a year, but like, what does weight neutral mean? You know, can you be healthy at whatever weight and all these things? and kind of starting from there. So we always started from the ground up inductively and being like, here's a billion supplements, you know, what do they do? And now it's like, well, as everybody gets older, which happens with everybody, then it tends to be weight, you know, type 2 diabetes, which my mom has, and I've bought berberine for her in previous years.
Nice.
And other concerns where it's not necessarily like, here's a random supplement, it's starting from the top down. So that's kind of interesting because this sounds like sort of quackery, but we're trying to think if there's AI tools we could use for data extraction from studies that could help. So there are certain tools now where you can insert a question and they'll just like pop out a bunch of studies that they think try to answer that question. And we only have a limited team of researchers, so we can't update everything at once, which is our current issue. Like we have a bunch of outdated stuff and it just keeps falling down the queue.
Yeah.
So we want to be able to find out like, hey, what do we really need to update right now? And what does the latest evidence say? And if there's more than one meta-analysis, do they contradict and why? And then what should we do with that? Because we just can't go through like,
yeah, it's so, you know, much
5,000 studies.
Yeah. It's, yeah. It, and it's just nonstop.
And yeah, it just, ugh. That's difficult.
It kind of sucks for, you always get a gotcha question, you know, like every week where somebody's like, hey, you know, this study said this, and we're like, okay, yes, we make mistakes like everybody does. And also like we can't look at literally every study. It's just not,
it's not possible. Yeah. Every single study.
People don't realize that.
No, there's a bunch of crappy journals out there that are pay to play.
Yeah, the Journal of Chinese and Iranian Crime Studies.
Oh, man. So, well, thanks for coming on. I think we kind of covered pretty much everything. So, you know, if you're going to, there aren't that many good supplements out there to necessarily you have to have, but I think we went over some of them that you may consider if you're maybe at risk for deficiencies of whatever, and probably good supplements to stay away from if you want to save your money and make sure that you're focusing on the right stuff. And
yeah, I think people are going to really appreciate this. Thanks so much. That was a great discussion. Yeah.
Thank you.
As the last thing I would say, if you're going to take a bunch of supplements, reconsider the bunch part. You know, it doesn't hurt to test one or two things at a time so you can see what works, because people spend way too much money on supplements, and it's better just to trim that down and then see what works.
That would
be nice. Big supplement versus big pharma.
That's the battle of the ages.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kamal, for coming on. If you want to check out Examine, go to examine.com for anything. If you want to check out a supplement that someone's touting, you can go there and check out the evidence. They aggregated it all. So, but they might not have some obscure new studies that are out there. They're just a small team.
No angry emails, please.
No angry emails. Thanks for coming on, Kamal.
That's my pleasure.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.